Hello everyone. In this video, I'm going to explain why prices determine costs and not vice versa. I will be talking through this flowchart here. You can see preferences at top. I'll just leave it there, but don't worry about this. I will explain it as the video continues. Now, if you can remember, in my last video, our old friend, the government employee, opened up his own coffee chain. In fact, he's rebranded to call himself GE, or G for short. And you can see the branded G Coffee. And in this video, using G as an example, I'm going to show you how the pricing of the coffee happens in practice, and how it is that the costs are determined by the prices rather than vice versa. So let's start with preferences then. First of all, why do we start with preferences? Well, that is because in the real world, human action is the thing that determines almost everything that happens. Real people with real tastes and real decisions. So let's have a look at what this looks like in our coffee market. Here are all the different people, a sampling of the people in the society and their various different tastes. And you can see within this group of people, there are people like Ray there, who doesn't like coffee for whatever reason. And there are people who really love coffee. And each one of them will, they'll value coffee differently as a product. And they'll have different price points at which they are willing to pay for coffee or not pay for coffee. Now, obviously, G has no real way of knowing this before he tests it on the market, but he does have a range of prices at which he is willing to sell. And on the real market, there will be a range of prices at which the customers will be willing to buy. And economists use these things called supply schedules and demand schedules in order to help work out exactly what these prices may be. So in this case, this is just an example. I wouldn't get caught up on these precise figures too much, but as you can see, the preference rank is on the left here. So let's just take Base Liz as one example. She would buy one coffee for $2, but she wouldn't pay any more than $1 for her second coffee. For the third coffee, she wouldn't pay any more than 67 cents. And for the fourth coffee, she wouldn't pay any more than 50 cents. So if she was going to buy four coffees, she wouldn't want to spend $8. She'd want to spend about $4.17, something like that. So you can see here that, and obviously the first coffee is going to be worth more to her than the fourth coffee because she doesn't want four coffees. Okay. So if we have a look at these schedules then, the demand schedules and the supply schedule, what do these mean? Well, let's have a look at the demand schedule first. That's the middle column. This means that there's one person who's willing to buy a coffee for $2. There are two people who are willing to buy it for $1 each cup. There are three people who want it for 67 cents. And there are four people who'd be willing to buy it at 50 cents. And then on the supply side, on the supply schedule, you can see there are three sellers who are willing to sell the coffee for two. There are two who are willing to sell it for one. There's one who's willing to sell it for 67 cents. And there are no sellers in the market willing to sell coffee for 50 cents. So those four people who want the coffee at 50 cents, they get they make no buys, you can see that the one coffee here is going to be sold at $2, two are going to be sold for $1 each, and one is going to be sold at 67 cents. Now let's bring back our man G. Now what's he going to do? Now he's got these kind of historical figures. He's managed to obtain this information about the coffee market. So what does he do with this? What price should he be selling the coffee at given this information? You can see, if it was him, he'd sell one at $2, he'd sell two at $1, and he'd sell one at 67 cents. But the average, so maybe he says, well, okay, let me average those up and set an average price for my coffee at $1.16 or $1.17 per cup. Or he could look at this and he could do deals. He could say, well, I will sell one coffee for $2 and I'll do a family deal for three coffees at $2.67. So what he decides to do, he says he sets his price at $1.16. Okay, so he's in some ways below the market price. You can see that he's way below that $2 a cup price, but he's above the $1 a cup price. And let's see how it goes. Well, here are all the different customers. They're coming, and you can see Friended there, he's willing to get one. Bantu, you know, maybe he's got a client and he grabs two. Ray, of course, she's lactose intolerant, she's not going to buy one. Black Lesbian, she comes in and buys them round for the whole cabinet because she's got important business to do as the Prime Minister. Based Liz, she's going to get one for her good buddy, the academic agent. And so you can see that, you know, this pricing strategy is working for G. Why did the pricing strategy work? Well, as I said, the individual units of coffee were below the perceived marginal value for a single cup, which was $2, but above the marginal value for multiple cups, which was working out at about $1 each for two, if you remember. G was banking on people buying more than one cup, thinking that they were getting a bargain. And so, this was working for him. And on day one of trading, he made some decent money. Let's pretend he made $200 in total revenue. And now, looking to tomorrow, he wants to repeat this success. He wants to make $200 revenue again. And so, looking forward to that, he must calculate his costs. And of course, his costs are going to be made up of, let's just keep this real simple, three different components, variables here. So he has employees, he has milk, and he has coffee beans. This is what he needs to sell his products. And so he must calculate something that we call the marginal revenue product, that is the MRP. And then he must calculate the discounted marginal revenue product, which is the DMRP. RMP is the return that the entrepreneur expects to receive. This is the $200 that he's aiming to get for his sales tomorrow. The DMRP is the price that the entrepreneur will pay today in expectation for the MRP. So these are, broadly speaking, the costs that he wants to pay now. The DMRP has to be less than the MRP for profit to occur. This is just basic common sense, of course. But how do we calculate the DMRP and how do we calculate the MRP? So let's just have a look at this. This is just an example, of course. Let's say A is employees, B is milk, and C is coffee. You can see that four employees plus 10 milk plus two coffee, that's going to get him $200 of return, his revenue. You can see there that if he only has four employees, so if you reduce A to 3A, he's only going to end up with $180. So the marginal revenue product of A is $20. So that means that the fourth employee should be paid no more than 20. If he's going to pay any more than 20, he's going to make a loss. You know, it's not worth employing the fourth employee for more than 20. He has to set it for less than that in order to make a profit. Let's give another example here. So let's say we have a look with one employee. So let's have a look at A. You've seen I've put one A with all the same ingredients there, makes $100. So a single employee gets a revenue of $100. But of course, no employees is going to get you a revenue of $0. So the MRP of the first employee is actually 100. And so, of course, we want to pay him no more than 100. So the marginal revenue product of the first employee is actually four times bigger than the fourth employee. So how does this work in practice? Well, so let's have a look at the four employees then. The first employee is Ginger Bill. We should pay him no more than $100. The second employee is Don. He should be paid no more than $50 because his MRP is 50. Harry is a third employee. He should be paid no more than $30. And Mark is the fourth employee, and his DMRP should be no more than $20. Let's just look at this in practice. So G here, he says, I'm going to pay you at these rates. He offers Bill $20 a day, and Bill is like, yes, I will work for $20. Now, Don, he has Bill as a basis of comparison, and he's like, well, why is this dude working for 20? G has offered him 10, and he says, no, I want to work for the same as Bill, $20. So let's see what happens. We have a bit of a dispute here between the worker and the employer. G says, 10 pay for you. Don says, look, I'm not going to work here for any less than 20. And G is faced with two options. He can either cave to Don, that's option two, have the $20, or he notes that Harry, he's willing to work for $10. And so he fires Don and hires Harry. So let's pretend all of this haggling and stuff has already taken place, and we settle on these rates of pay. So Bill gets 20, Don gets 10, Harry gets 5, Mark gets 5. You know, and obviously there's going to be jockeying and negotiation, and you know, there's a bit of a knowledge deficit here between the workers and G. They don't know exactly what his margins are. They don't know exactly how much they are worth, and so let's just say that we reach these numbers. Then he has to price up the milk, and here are the supply and demand schedules in the current milk market. You can see here that there's nobody in the market who's willing to pay $2 a unit for milk. There are five who are willing to pay at $1.50. There are 10 willing to pay at $1, and so on and so forth. So G here, well, he needs 10 milk to make his daily target for coffees. So he buys up that first five for 50 cents each. And then he buys the next five at the next rate up for $1 each. So he buys five at 50 cents, five at $1. So his total spend is $7.50. But no, tragedy. There is a new challenger entered the market. The gypsy has decided. He's seen G making all his money on the coffee, and he's decided he wants to get in on the coffee game. And so here's Gypsy Coffee. What's going to happen now? Well, the gypsy, unbeknownst to G, who was just counting up his revenues for the last day, and you know, he missed his chance here. The gypsy has sneaked in, and he's bought that five milk at $1, and he's bought the five milk at 50 cents. So G is now forced to buy at these higher rates, five milk at $1.50, and there's still five left for him at $1. So G's net spend is now $12.50 on the 10 units of milk, and the gypsy is basically costing $5 for sneaking in to the market. Now, you can see here that the milk market, after the gypsy has entered it, may adjust. Maybe the milk suppliers decide that they want to produce more milk. Effectively what's happened is that the gypsy and G, between them, have bid down the price of milk. So let's just pretend that the milk market adjusts and the producers decide to you know, supply more milk in this way. If the gypsy tries the same trick tomorrow, and that is raiding the 5 at 50 cents and the 5 at 10 cents, now it will only cost G $10 for his 10 milk as opposed to $12.50 at these adjusted rates. And again, if this situation continued, they'd continue to bid down the price of milk. And if more people entered the coffee market, that would also affect the prices and the supply of milk. You can see this is very dynamic. Let's price up the coffee then, the coffee beans. And you can see that this market here, you can, so, you know, there are four suppliers who are offering at 10. Nobody wants it for that price. It's too high. There are three who will offer it for $7.50. You know, the one person's willing to buy at that price and so on and so forth. And look, the gypsy has done the same thing to G in this. He snuck in. He's bought that first coffee at $2.50, and he's bought one at $5. So G again late to the market. He was caught out by the newcomer. His net spend for today is now $12.50 on the two coffee. He's bought one at $5 and he's bought one at $7.50. So ahead of tomorrow's trading day, G's costs are now what he spent 40 on employees. He spent $12.50 on milk. He spent $12.50 on coffee. So his total costs are $65. And now notice his costs are ahead of tomorrow. So he's spent the money up front for what's going to happen. So let's and then we start the whole cycle again. So here are all the people with their preferences. You know, they haven't really changed. You know, Ray still doesn't like coffee. Based Liz still really loves it, and so on and so forth. And then we get the expenditures of the consumers. You know, similar things happen. But let's have a look at the end of day two. G has only made $120 in revenue, which is $80 below his target of $200. Remember, he wanted to make $200, but he only made $120. So his profits for today are 55 cents, which is $120 less the $65 he spent, of course. And now the whole process starts again. And maybe G has to sit down and think, hey, why on day two did I make less than I made on day one? You know, maybe some of his new customers went to the gypsy. Maybe he lost some people to that. Maybe customers are starting to get used to his pricing of, $1.16 a cup. And that's changed how, customers are doing their marginal valuations. There are all sorts of variables for why this has happened. He can't know for sure. But, of course, he can try again. But you can see how his costing is actually coming after the pricing. It's all the causal relations run from the preferences to the prices and then to the costs. Hopefully this is clear. I realize that some of this is a little bit complicated. If you have any questions, leave them in the comments. I'd be willing to answer them. But hopefully you know a little bit more econ today than you did yesterday. Thank you very much.
And a very special thanks to Sir Percy Blakeney, The Crimson Satyr, Time Stealer, Nuri Nelson, Macadamia, Rosie Alpaca, Kuzga, Holy Spatula, Bruno Liette, Tragic Vision, Michael Burt, Ginger Bill, Blake Barrows, Charles Vincent, and Edward Darrah.